In the UK, Ling Pang interviews people from all around the world, and she is Bondi Tunes International.
Bondi Tunes, playing all over the planet now!
Hi, this is Ling Pang for Bondi Tunes International. I'm delighted to introduce an interview by Phil Richards with Dr. Roberts from the Blow Monkeys, courtesy of Livewire.
Hi, it's Phil Richards. Welcome. And today I'm chatting with Dr. Robert of the Blow Monkeys, and in particular about their new single, Just Out. But first of all, let's hear one of their classic tracks, Digging Your Scene. So Dr. Robert joins us now from the Blow Monkeys. Hi there.
Hello, how you doing?
Welcome to Livewire. So we're going to be playing something from your new album later on. That's the new single, Dust at Her Feet.
Yeah, that's the next single from the album. We recorded the album sort of remotely during the lockdown, and we've released a couple of singles, and Dust at Your Feet is the next one. The album will be out in September.
Sounds like an interesting title. What's it about then?
It started off as a kind of thank you to, you know, women in my life that had influenced me, that had helped me along, particularly family members and stuff, and my wife. And so it was written about kind of, you know, from that point of view, mentors.
So let's go back to when the Blow Monkeys were first formed. That was back in 81. Seems like quite a long time ago now. But you were described as delivering a post-punk slant, and the band quickly moved into a more soulful sound.
Well, I don't know. I mean, that's what they say. I never thought, okay, well, when I grow up, I'm going to deliver a post-punk slant.
No.
Because I don't know what that is.
You've heard that term, though.
I don't know what delivering any slant is, really. I try to avoid delivering as much. No, we just, we just got together and made music, and then somebody comes along and tells us what it is.
Certainly you developed into a rather soulful sound with lovely harmonies and really great lyrics and some lovely tunes.
Well, thank you. I mean, it was eventually, yeah. We took a while to get there. We went through all sorts of machinations and permutations. But the ones for which we're known, I guess you could say, were kind of soul-influenced. And, yeah, that's kind of my sort of default in my singing, I guess.
We're always hearing Digging Your Scene as a sort of classic track nowadays, and any radio station playing that sort of music. I mean, that's included in the playlist for sure. It's a great track and still listened to and enjoyed by many.
Yeah, I mean, as they say, it's been very lucky for us, that, and it doesn't have to be this way and wait. You know, it's always, you know, it's nice to have a couple that are always being played, but, you know, the buzz for me is still in making new things and playing gigs and seeing people react to new stuff as well as old stuff. But, yeah, no, I mean, we've got a hell of a history now, so, you know, and it's been a hell of a journey.
So after about 10 years, you took up a solo career. Tell us about that then.
After 10 years it was of the band, that was the first time we'd all had families and I'd left London. It felt like the right time, the beginning of the 90s, to try something different. So I went on to make kind of 10 solo albums and do a lot of work with other people like Paul Weller and Beth Orton and so on, to sort of producing and writing, and eventually came back to the idea of wanting to be in a band again. So that's when we got the group back together.
Right, so the Blow Monkeys reunited, and the original lineup, in fact, the old team.
Yeah. Well, they were all at similar stages of their lives. Their kids had grown up and fled the nest. Tony, subsequently, our drummer, has left, and we've got a new drummer, Crispin, from a band called Galliano. But, it was the same four, initially.
You've since then released 6 albums and done hundreds of live shows. Must have been really sort of fantastic to get back into it after all those years. And actually, you know, you don't realise you're going to do it at the time during the 10 years as a solo career, but you must have really enjoyed coming back, I guess, because that's why you did it.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. And we've all got this history that we've shared together. And if I was going to get back in a band, it made no sense to me to do anything other than get the Blow Monkeys back together, because the remit was, okay, we're gonna make new music, which is what we've done. You know, we've made kind of more records since we've been back together than we did in their first run. So that's always the important part for me, is keep moving on.
If we go back to your childhood, did you always know you were gonna do this as a career?
I can't speak for the others.
No.
I think Tony the drummer was definitely always gonna be. He was a bit of a child prodigy and a Welsh. He grew up in Swansea and he was a sort of in the Welsh youth jazz orchestra and stuff like that. So I think that was always on the cards with him. Mick and them, I'm not so sure, but I think they always, you know, with me, it was pure fear, really. What the hell else am I going to do?
Right. So you were always a musical person then, even at school, I guess.
I was always obsessed with music and I always escaped into music as a child. So my family were very musical, no professional musicians or anything, but a real deep love of music. So, but it wasn't until kind of my teen years that I started to learn an instrument and busk and you know, get that first kind of buzz of somebody stopping and listening to you playing a song and stuff. So It came later, yeah.
What sort of music did you like listening to as a child?
Well, I mean, very early on, I was obsessed with Glenn Miller.
Oh, wow.
I think I'd seen the Glenn Miller Story film.
Yeah.
With Jimmy Stewart, and as a small child. And I've got two elder sisters who were big Beatles fans, so all the Beatles singles were about, and all that 60s music, Backrack David was very big in my house. My mum was really into that, and Aretha Franklin. And then my first kind of musical hero that I really bought records for was Mark Bolan and T-Rex. And then that led on to kind of punk, which was kind of my generation. And around that time, you know, a lot of soul music too, from where I lived in King's Lynn in Norfolk. It was a bit of a soul hangout. So, you know, lots of influences really. And then punk came along, and that was the one that said, okay, people of my generation are forming bands, learning three chords and doing it. And that was the, although obviously the Blow Monkeys are musically a million miles from that, that was really the inspiration.
And what sort of thing do you listen to nowadays then?
Nowadays? Well, I'm a massive fan of kind of blues music. So I listen to an awful lot of Mississippi country blues, and I listen increasingly to kind of classical music. And I just listen to all sorts, really. I mean, I'm not tribal in my listening. I'll go whatever's on. I love listening to radio and just being surprised that, you know, and so, you know, so pretty wide ranging, really. Everything, really, except for kind of heavy metal.
All right. Now, 40 years down the line, amazingly, and the band have recorded this new album. It's called Journey to You. I think we're going to have a listen to some of that in a minute. But tell us about that album then. Just that was recorded during lockdown, wasn't it?
Yeah, the first 3 months of lockdown last year, I kind of went into a bit of a writing frenzy, because, you know, it was suddenly a bit of a novelty to have all this time on your hands and this kind of peaceful atmosphere. So I live here in southern Spain, and I've got a little home studio. So I started writing and sending it to the boys in the band to add their bits. And that just carried on, and it turned into an album. And it felt like the right thing. We're celebrating 40 years together. I wanted to make something that was quintessentially us, so that when people heard it, they thought, oh, God, that's the Blow Monkeys. But, you know, without copying ourselves or treading on places that we've been before. So hopefully we've done that, you know. So we've got a tour lined up in October. Everything is on our website and Facebook about all that. And hopefully, we've never played those songs yet together, so we might even have to break the habit of a lifetime and have a rehearsal, you know.
And, of course, the album features the extraordinary single Time Storm.
We put that out first last year. The disorientating kind of existential crisis that we all faced in the early days of lockdown. And that one kind of... That was a good starter, because it kind of summed up which way the album was going, and it had a lot of radio play, so that's done well, yeah. Mick Anker's on bass, Neville Henry's on saxophone, and Crispin Taylor is on drums.
Can you give me a lowdown of your social media?
Social media would be, well, Blow Monkeys, at the Blow Monkeys on Instagram. We've got official Blow Monkeys on Facebook, and I'm at the Blow Monkeys on Twitter, so that pretty much covers what I do on social media.
As the... So, Robert, we're going to finish with Dust at Her Feet then, and this is your new single coming out?
Yeah, this is the latest new single from the new album, and, very, very pleased with this one, Dust at Her Feet.
Thanks for joining us, Robert.
No problem, my pleasure. Thank you.
And I hit every hurt. the way from a boy to a man, trying hard to understand. And I took every wrong turn in this troubled land. I remember how you cried, and I know I cried too. But it's the small acts of love and kindness that get us through. I was dust at her feet, never felt so complete. I was there just to learn the ways of the world.
Richards with Dr. Roberts from the Blow Monkeys.
Adam Devlin, pick of the week.
Okay, we're here to talk to do pick of the week. Pick of the week is where Adam, who is a music guru, has a discussion with me about a song that he wants to play. We're doing two of them this week. Cliff Richard was born in 1750. I'm joking. How old is he? Let me tell you a story. And we're going to do Cliff Richard with Olivia Newton-John, the Australian singer Olivia Newton-John. They've got a song that they put together and they're singing together. I've heard it. I just want to make a point about Cliff Richard, if you don't mind, Adam, before I let you get off on this.
Of course. Oh,
sorry, excuse the expression. When I was in a car in 1974, I was 12, and my father and my stepmother were in the front. My father was driving, and it's 1974. And my father said to my mother, "I think Cliff Richard is a homosexual." And my stepmother said, "Ah, don't be silly." And I often wondered since. Now, is he gay?
Yes,
and did he ever come out?
Yes, he is. He has come out. He's of course lived with his long-term partner for quite a while, number of years, and he and his partner, I believe, have even had a commitment ceremony.
Oh,
together, but he keeps his private life incredibly private.
And why not?
And why not? Absolutely. You know, when you've been around as long as Cliff Richard has, you know, it wasn't until later in his life that he started to relax about his sexuality. And for many years he did deny it. But when you've been around as long as he had, and you've had as many hits as he's had, and you've avoided scandal the way he has, you know, I think he deserves a little bit of privacy about his private life. And
the other thing is, time has moved on. I mean, I talked about 1974. You know, in those days, it was a tough call for anyone. I mean, there's so many Elton John, you know, famous people who were gay and really couldn't come out because of a number of reasons.
Absolutely.
Not to mention the fact that the popularity of
it would have been commercial suicide for both, for either of them to come out. I mean, same with even people like Freddie Mercury at the height of their career. You know, he wouldn't have been able to come out either. Even though everybody knew, you know, as you said, you know, your father was suggesting in the 70s, well, isn't Cliff Richard gay?
Yeah.
You know, I don't think anyone was shocked when he came out and, well, he never actually confirmed it. He just sort of, you know, started slipping it into his narrative that he was...
And by the way, I'm gay.
You know, nobody, I don't think, could have ever been surprised that Elton John came out as gay. But, you know, even though we all knew this, they couldn't say it at the time. Thank God society has progressed to a point where, you know, up-and-coming artists, people like Troy Savine,
who's for example, an Australian singer,
Can actually now be out and proud. And
that brings me to, you know, when I first met you back in 1989 and we worked in TNT, a freight company. And I remember you and I sitting over a fire, believe it or not, here in Australia.
Yes.
There was a fire. It must have been winter. There was a fire in this pub. Just a little fire, you know, not a... The pub wasn't far. And you told me you were gay, and I thought, what's new?
And you're one of the first people I'd ever told. So
I think I was. Now, tell me about Cliff Richard and Olivia Newton-John. Interesting mix. They probably have known each other forever.
Well, Olivia owes a large part of her career to Cliff Richard. Their friendship and their professional relationship goes back to the 60s, when Olivia first went to England in the late 60s. She toured around a bit doing some singing on her own and with Pat Farrow as Pat and Olivia. And then she got a guest role on the Cliff Richard show doing backing vocals. And she did one episode and Cliff liked her and the audience liked her. So they invited her back to duet with Cliff. And he added her permanently to the show.
Was this before she made it in America? Obviously, this is in Britain.
Yes. This was before she had her own recording contract. And so she was doing backing vocals and she was touring with Cliff Richard. And he recorded a couple of duets with her on some of his early albums in the late 60s. Then, of course, she got her own contract and, you know, her career took off both in the UK and, in more importantly, in America. You know, they both continued to have private, personal success, solo success. Then Olivia asked him to be involved in a recording of the soundtrack to Xanadu, where they recorded the single Suddenly.
Lovely song. I love that song.
Beautiful song, and it was a big hit for the two of them. And he, moving forward in the 90s, he wrote and produced a musical in London called Heathcliff, which was the story of Wuthering Heights.
Of course, yeah.
And Olivia performed with him on the official soundtrack release to that musical called Heathcliff, Songs from Heathcliff, and... Actually, I think they did four songs together on that, and one of them, called Had to Be, was released in the UK as a single and was quite successful. They've recorded together on numerous albums of each other's over the years. And in the 90s, in the early 90s, Olivia was coming back from her first bout of cancer, and she hadn't toured for quite a while. She hadn't recorded for a little while, and she was wanting to get back into work, but she was nervous about doing it, and she wasn't quite sure if she could do a full concert. And Cliff Richard was planning a tour of Australia, and so he said to her, look, please come on tour of Australia with me. You know, I'll do the first half. You can come on and we can do a couple of duets. You can do a set on your own. I'll come back on, do another couple of duets, and then you can go off and I'll finish the show. And she was like, yay. So that they've toured together in Australia, and that was a phenomenally successful concert tour.
And when was that?
That was in the early 90s.
Oh, okay.
It was actually the very first time I saw Olivia in concert.
I was going to say, Adam Devlin must have gone to one of these concerts.
and you know, they've continued to record with each other spontaneously throughout the decades. In the mid-90s, they even hosted the World Music Awards together in Europe.
Gosh.
So, you know, and they call each other best friends. So, you know, I'm not surprised that on this album, on Cliff Richard's new album, that he has one duet on it, and it's with Olivia.
Okay. Now, look, tell us about this song. It's called Everybody's Someone.
Yeah, it's the new single. It's called Everybody's Somebody. Everybody's Someone, sorry. Mm-hmm. Now, it's not a new song. The song has been around for a couple of years, and it's been recorded by a few other people. But it's a beautiful message about, you know, just being positive and just understanding that no matter what you're going through in your life, even at your darkest ebb, to somebody you're special. Okay. And it's this whole album of Cliff's, by the way, it's called Rise Up. And you may recall, Henry, that he's had some legal issues of late with the BBC.
Yes.
where they pretty much accused him of pedophilia. Yeah. Based on a raid that Scotland Yard did on his premises, on one of his homes.
That's right, yes.
Now, there were no charges laid. Scotland Yard released statements saying he's got absolutely nothing to answer for. He's not under suspicion of anything. However, in the meantime, the BBC had gone out publishing these stories. Anyway, he sued the BBC for defamation. He won the case, and he decided that even though he was quite bitter about what they'd done, because, you know, that sort of mud
it's
is
not
difficult.
Good, and it sticks. It's the mud that sticks, and it's, you know, I understand that there's, you know, the Me Too movement, all that stuff that's going on. I get it. I understand it. A lot of people did a lot of bad things. Australian, you know, Craig McLaughlin is accused of doing stuff. And the thing is, I have to say accused because legally no one knows, really.
No, that's right.
It's unfair. I have to say this, and I'm going to be bold and brash when I say this, but a lot of people are doing a lot of famous people because they think there's gain in it. Is that a fair thing to say, Adam?
I think there's a certain amount of that going on, Henry, and I think it's disgusting.
Yeah.
You know, to accuse somebody of sexual impropriety is
how low can you go?
Exactly. I mean, if you're doing it falsely, if the person is innocent and you're accusing them of this and it's going public, then, you know, you really are the scum of the earth. Because as we just said a moment ago, this, you know, there's all, once it's out there, there'll always be somebody that will believe it and will go, well, you know.
Look at Jeffrey Rush. And I mean,
yeah.
It's like there's this kind of wave going over the world. And I want to stress this. I understand a lot of bad stuff went down.
And if you've sexually assaulted somebody or harassed somebody and, you know, your career is destroyed because of it, then good. If you're guilty.
Yes, if you're guilty. This is the problem. Okay, look, we've got to move on. This is Bondi Tunes International. Adam Devlin is with me. He's our music guru. And coming up, we're going to be talking with about... Oh, I wish we were talking with Dolly Parton. That would be good. Dolly Parton's new song. Adam, would you like to present this song from Cliff Richard for and Olivia Newton-John for us?
Absolutely. Here it is. This is... it's one of the album tracks off his new album. The album is called Rise Up, and it's his response to the legal troubles he's been having over the last couple of years. It's an album of positivity, and I think that's an amazing response to what he's gone through. These songs are about respect and love and treating your fellow man the way you'd like to be treated yourself. So it gives me great pleasure to introduce to you this song. It's called Everybody's Someone. It's a beautiful song. Cliff and Olivia, of course, have recorded many times in the past, and this is the latest duet they've done together. It's a brilliant song. I love it. They sound amazing doing it. And so here they are, Cliff and Olivia with Everybody's Someone.
Everybody's someone. come back again. Same old, same old. A thousand faces pass you by, you never look into their eyes. You feel so ordinary, they feel so ordinary. Everybody's home. And every day we seem to chase the perfect smile, the perfect face. Same old, same old.
For everyone who gets a million more are left behind. They feel so ordinary. You feel so ordinary.
Hey, everybody's someone. No matter where you come from, there's light in every single star. You're more than who think you are. Hey, everybody's someone, and when it's hard to hold on, remember you are not alone. This house is everybody's home.
From a king to a common man,
we're all part star. You're more than who you think you are. Hey, everybody's someone, and when it's hard to hold on, remember you are not alone. This house is everybody's home.
Inside the lives of Bondi Tunes international correspondents, Adam Devlin.
I'm Adam Devlin. I was born in a small coastal town back in the 1960s and lived there until I was 18, when I moved to Sydney to go to uni. I came out as gay in the early 1990s and was one of the lucky ones, in that my friends and family had absolutely no issue with that. I've had a few careers over the years. I started out as a cook and then moved into corporate customer service. I'm also a writer and have had several poems published. I've won a playwriting competition and had several film scripts that I co-wrote produced. I also co-wrote and acted in a comedy drama series for ARTV, which was a bit of fun. I've also contributed to several books on pop culture, and I'm currently writing a book on the 1980s Hollywood musical Xanadu for BMNO Media. 10 years ago, my partner and I moved from Sydney to Melbourne, and that was the best move we've ever made. We love living in Melbourne. It has great restaurants, a thriving bar culture, and Australia's best art scene. We don't have any children, but we do have a 23-year-old cat called Stella and a 14-year-old dog, a Maltese cross, called Maddie. I'm one of those weirdos that lives for politics, and I've been blessed to have been Bondi Tunes Australian political reporter for as long as there's been a Bondi Tunes, and I love doing it. I'm also passionate about music and have a vast music collection spanning almost every genre. And I also, from time to time, do a musical pick of the week for Bondi Tunes, where I'll discuss and then play some new music that I think is particularly good. For fun, I like to catch up with friends and watch old movies. We love to travel, and we've travelled to almost every continent, and hopefully we'll get to them all in the coming years. I love being on Bondi Tunes, as it's real radio with real stories from real people right around the world. You just never know what story is going to come up next. This is the Australian political correspondent, Adam Devlin, and I am Bondi Tunes.
Inside the lives of Bondi Tunes correspondents, Adam Devlin.
Bondi Tunes International broadcasts all around the world, but all of the world comes to Bondi Beach, Australia, especially in summer. This February, Mike Braid from Liverpool, England, will join Henry O'Donovan on Bondi Beach, Sydney, Australia, and they'll walk the streets of Bondi to chat with people from everywhere. Japan, Europe, South America, North America, Spain, Israel, Russia. I mean everywhere. They'll be there after dark on the streets of Bondi to find out what people all over the world think of their futures in a volatile time. But we'll have fun too. We'll chat about their customs, what makes them happy. We want to get a world view of events from people all over the world. It's a global thing because we are Bondi Tunes International. We are real radio.
From Australia, this is Bondi Tunes.
In the UK, Ling Pang interviews people from all around the world, and she is Bondi Tunes International.
Bondi Tunes, playing all over the planet now.
Hi, this is Ling Pang for Bondi Tunes International. I'm delighted to introduce an interview by Jason Moyle with Chesney Hawkes, courtesy of LiveWire.
Hello, I'm Jason Moyle, and my guest on the show today is pop singer, actor, and let's give a big hello to Chesney Hawkes.
Hi, Jason. How are you, mate?
I'm good, thank you. So let's talk about your brand new single. I say brand new because it is a remix of your 1991 classic, The One and Only. And of course, it was written by Nick Kershaw and now has been remixed by Nick Kershaw as well.
Yes, exactly. So we managed to get our sticky mitts on the original multi-tracks, which was really quite wonderful. And there's Nick and I have been friends for over 30 years now. And there's nobody I trust more than Nick to take over the helm of a project like this, you know, and he co-produced the original anyway. So yeah, so he's zhuzhed it up, and he's re-recorded all the guitars, and you know, done some drum programming, and just kind of added a little extra fairy dust to it, and we have One and Only 2.1.
Yeah, and of course you starred in Buddy Song, which The One and Only came from, and that had a stellar cast, didn't it?
Yeah, all sorts of people in that film that went on to do, you know, some great, great things. Julia Sawala, who was in Absolutely Fabulous eventually. We had Nick Moran, who went on to do Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Barrels. We had Lee Ross, who went on to do a lot of Mike Lee films and obviously, you know, all sorts of other things, a well-loved actor. Yeah, and we had Michael Elphick in there, who was Boone originally, you know, Sharon Deuce, who's done all sorts of things. So, yeah, we had a great cast, really great.
So you were about 19 at the time, so that must have been a real experience for you. So tell me what it was like back in the day.
Well, I was younger when I made the film. I was more like 17, 18, because that was all before the One and Only days, of course. So, yeah, it was wonderful working with Roger. I mean, he's you know, a legend, obviously, and gave me some great advice in those days, and we're still in touch now. Yeah, I mean, I'd never thought of acting or anything up to that point. So everything was music based for me, and still is, you know, still my number one thing in life, apart from my kids, of course. And yeah, so acting came along as a bit of a surprise. When that film was coming, I really only went along to the audition because I thought there was a chance of a record deal at the end of it, which okay. Turned out to be true. So I was very lucky. I was right for the part and got the part, and then ended up, you know, obviously recording the soundtrack album, which is where The One and Only came from. So that's the basis of the story originally.
Of course, you come from a musical family because your father, Len Chip Hawkes, was in the Tremolos as well, wasn't he?
Indeed. Still is, although these days he's he's not out on the road as much as he used to be. In fact, I've been kind of taking over the reins of the tremolos. Last year, he wasn't very well. And I did a 60s gold tour as the lead singer of the Tremolos, and I'm doing it again this year, the end of the year, 60s gold. So yeah, that's been fun.
And you've done some collaborations with your dad as well, haven't you?
Yes, over the years we've done a few little collaborations, and we also did a tour together, a father and son tour, which was really wonderful. We did half of my music and half of his. And my brother was the drummer, and that was a lovely, lovely time on tour. One of the most fun tours I've ever done.
We'll go back to your music in a minute, Chesney, but right now we'll have a chat about your celebrity TV shows, because you've been on quite a few of those, including a Celebrity MasterChef in 2015 when you were the semi-finalist. Do you still cook?
I do, yeah. I mean, my wife would say not enough, but but yes, I do. I like to cook, and that was a great experience. One of the most nerve-wracking experiences ever, though, that was. I don't know why. Maybe it's because I wasn't really a cook at all until that moment. So I got thrown in the deep end there.
So we don't see everything on the TV when it comes to the cooking. Is it really that time-pressured?
Yeah, everything is very, very real. Like when they put that timer on, that is all you have. You know, there's no magic or trickery involved in that. It's you have to come up with the goods in the time that you have.
And you got to the semi-final, as I mentioned, which is no mean feat.
Yeah, I bluffed my way through it, to be quite honest with you, Jason.
Okay.
And you were also on the Channel 4 programme The Games as well, weren't you?
Yeah, I think they should bring that back, although there was a lot of injuries that happened throughout that programme, including myself, actually. Okay. I ended up having to have an operation on my hip because of a water ski jumping accident. But yeah, that was a really fun experience as well. It was like, you know, training for 4 months in all sorts of Olympic disciplines like javelin, sumo wrestling. Would you believe I was a sumo wrestler there?
Okay.
That's one of my, you know, where they do that game, you know, two truths and a lie or whatever. So one of my truths is that I am a trained sumo wrestler.
Okay.
But yeah, that was a great experience, actually. Really fun. And I got to meet some great people. I'm still friends with Craig Charles, was one of the other celebrities in that one. Kevin Sim is a good mate of mine now through that. So yeah, it was good fun.
And you were also in Celebrity Coach Trip.
That must have been interesting. Yeah,
that was recently. I did that one just at the end of last year, and it was shown in January. But I only came in at the kind of towards the end. So like, you know, a lot of the contestants on the coach had been on board for like 2.5 weeks. And then myself and Nancy DeLolio, who was my partner, we came in for the last 3 or 4 days, you know, so we felt like a bit of we're just kind of coming in to take all the glory at the end here.
So how did that happen? Why did you come in on the end?
It was just the way it happened. You know, they approached me and Nancy, and I didn't know that Nancy was going to be on until I got on the coach, but they approached us and said, we'd like to come on as a kind of special guest at the end. So yeah, it was fun. It was really, really a fun few days.
So let's go back to your music now. And as we mentioned, you are still performing and you're still writing loads of songs as well. And you've got a brand new box set that's come out. Tell us a bit more about that.
Well, this box set, here it is here. I know your listeners can't hear, but I'm showing you now. It's out on CD. It will also be available digitally, but I do love this kind of tactile, you know, physical copy. Like, I don't know if you agree with that. Maybe I'm old fashioned.
No, I do.
I like to have something to hold on to, you know. So, you know, it's a 5 CD, 1 DVD set of all my albums up to 2012, which is when I put my last album out. And it's like a walk down memory lane for me. You know, it's a record of everything that I've put out. So, you know, I dug in and found all the old demos from Buddy Song years and outtakes of songs that I'd never been heard and never, you know, songs that were written for Buddy Song but were never actually released. You know, it's really been a fun project too. And I was heavily involved in the whole project. So it was really fun to put it together.
So there are 5 CDs and 1 DVD, which is made up of videos and live performances.
Yeah, exactly. It's all of the promotional videos for the singles. Over the years, and there's a couple of really fun kind of old 1991 footage of me do it live in Germany and things like that, you know. Okay. Top of the Pops, we have some Top of the Pops footage, and yeah, it was really, really fun.
So your box set is from 1991 to 2012.
Actually 12.
It, you know, is 12.
Yes, because that was when the last my last album came out. So
apart from this collection that's just coming out, are you planning a new album as well?
Yes, I've had a new album ready to go for a couple of years now, and obviously pandemic has put a hold on that. we are going to be releasing that in the summer.
Apart from your tour with the Tremolos, have you got any other gigs lined up as well?
Yes, lots. If anyone is interested in coming to see me live, it's all on chesneyhawk.com. I've got loads of gigs through the year. I'm actually here in the UK touring right now. It's nice to be back on in front of a crowd, Jason.
Absolutely.
It's
yeah.
Been a little while. It's really nice. I've got a lot of festivals. I'm doing a lot of Rewind and Let's Rock festivals, got some retro things, and I've got the odd kind of Butlins here and there, and a few other festivals and theatres and things. So yeah, it's all coming in for this year.
Do you have social media as well, Chesney?
Yes. I mean, everything's on ChesneyHawks.com. I'm on Twitter under Chesney Hawks. I'm Instagram under Chesney Hawks Official. I'm even on TikTok.
Oh, right.
Chesney Hawks. Yeah, that's a new thing for me. I guess I'm trying to get down with the kids. Well, just by saying down with the kids, you know, you're not down with the kids.
Any TikTok videos yet?
Yeah, there's a few on there. I get my kids to help me out with those ones.
Also, during the pandemic, you did a show for Hospital Radio, didn't you?
Yes, I did. I've done a little bit of radio over the years. Hospital Radio approached me on a charitable basis to see if I would be, you know, interested in putting together a couple of shows for them to be played around, I think it was like 100 hospitals up and down the country. So yeah, I did a Christmas one in 2020 during our kind of first couple of lockdowns. And then I did another one my favorite 90s songs or something like that. And it was really fun. That was a really nice thing to be doing.
Right. Would you like to introduce your remixed version of your 1991 classic, The One and Only?
Yes, this is the one and only 2022 Nick Kershaw remix for your listening pleasure.
Thank you, Chesney.
Thank you for having me.
Jason Moyle with Chesney Hawks.
It's a Broadway melody. Now to five hit records from Broadway shows between 1950 and 1980 by artists who had not appeared in those musicals, although two did have unusual direct connections to the initial production. In December 1963, at the behest of his manager, Louis Armstrong made a demonstration recording of the song Hello Dolly for the song's publisher to use to promote the upcoming show. The show, starring Carol Channing, who first sang the title song in public, opened on January 16, 1964 at the St. James Theatre and quickly became a major success. The same month, Cap Records released Armstrong's publishing demo as a commercial single. His version reached number one on the U.S. Billboard Hot 100, ending the Beatles' streak of three number one hits in a row over 14 consecutive weeks, and becoming the biggest hit of Armstrong's career. Hello Dolly won the Grammy Award for Song of the Year in 1965, and Armstrong received a Grammy for Best Vocal Performance Male. He also performed the song together with Barbra Streisand in the 1969 film version. So, here's that demo record that made pop history. Louis Armstrong and Hello Dolly.
Hello Dolly, this is Louis Dolly. It's so nice to have you back where you belong. You looking swell, Dolly. I can tell, Dolly. You still glowing, you still growing, you still going strong. I feel the room sway while the band's playing one of our old favorite songs from way back when. So take a rap, fellas. Find an empty lap, fellas. Dolly, never go away again.
Peace. It isn't all it seems. It's 17. A brown-eyed girl in hand-me-downs whose name I never could pronounce said, pity please the ones who serve. They only get what they deserve. In the rich relation hometown queen marries into what she needs with a guarantee of company and haven for the elderly. Remember those who win the game lose the love they sought to gain in Devon shores of quality and dubious integrity. The small seeds accounts received at 17. To those of us who knew the pain of Valentines that never came, and those whose names were never called when choosing sides for basketball. As long ago and far away, the world was younger than today, and dreams were all they gave for free to ugly duckling girls like me. We all play the game when we dare to cheat ourselves, it's solitaire.
Henry O'Donovan.